And the theme of today is dana. On the schedule, it's a dana day. Even though it has a special name, it might look as though it's somehow separate from non-dual teachings of the Buddha. Of course, they all relate together. They all came from the same place. Dana, or generosity, is notable as being first on the list of the 10 perfections, the paramita, the spiritual qualities to be perfected for full enlightenment. Also, the dana paramita was the last one that was completed by the Bodhisattva during his incalculable period of training, preparation. According to the legends, it wasn't until the last birth before his birth as Siddhartha Gautama that the dana paramita, the fulfillment of generosity, is perfected. Dana, generosity, is the most basic, direct manifestation of unselfishness. That gesture of the heart that says, how could I be more important than you? How could that be? So it's a conscious breaking through, a letting go of that feeling of this is mine to share, to let go of that fixation of the mind on mindness, mamankara. I mean, when we think about dana, generosity, often this focuses upon material giving, what's called amisa dana, material gifts. Giving food to a hungry person, donating some money at the end of a retreat, giving to your favorite charity to support a school or orphanage or dog's home. Amisa dana is material offering, sharing the physical things that we possess. But there's many other aspects of dana, both there in the teachings and also as we can develop them. The Buddha also spoke about abhaya dana. Abhaya is fear, abhaya is fearless. Abhaya dana is the giving of fearlessness. What this means is, as I was describing yesterday about sila, if I am honest, I'm not going to steal your things, I'm not going to physically attack you, I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not going to flirt with you, to cause sexual desire or sexual engagement against social agreements, being a partner of someone else, being a monk. If I live according to the values of sila, then you know, you don't need to be afraid of me. You don't need to lock up your things. You don't need to physically protect yourself. Because you know, this guy's safe. He doesn't want to get anything from me. He doesn't want to hurt me. He's not trying to deceive me. So we can relax. It's abhayadana. Giving others the space to not be anxious, to not be afraid of you, to not be worried about you. When you live in a Buddhist monastery, you find that the deer will come and graze, browse on the bushes right up next to the buildings. They look up when you walk past, but they usually don't even run away. The rabbits at Chiha's monastery in England got so relaxed they would sometimes even lie on their sides to eat the grass. They wouldn't even bother to sit up to eat. It's a safe place. I'm not kidding. Like a Roman banquet, they lie on their sides to nibble the grass. It's a safe place. So abhayadana is a beautiful gift that we can offer to others. The most supreme gifts is that of the Dhamma itself. As the Buddha said, sabbadanang dhammadanang jinati. All kinds of generosity, all kinds of giving. The giving of Dhamma is the supreme. So helping others to practice, to understand the Dhamma, this is also wonderful. Beautiful kind of gift that we can give. Not just handing somebody a Dhamma book, but also being an example for them. Explaining. Modeling what's a noble, wise, mindful, compassionate way to be. Other aspects of dana, almost more difficult, more challenging than material offerings, is giving our time, giving our attention. Particularly in this era of very divided attention, always checking our cell phone for emails, tweets, RSS feeds, upgrades. It's hard to pay attention to who's here. Hard to keep the attention on this conversation. But to offer our attention is a beautiful offering. To have time for each other. Sometimes that can be much harder than writing a check. To be patient, to receive, to listen, to have time, to give time. This is another kind of offering. Offering Dhamma is also offering our own practice. So this can mean applying the kind of wisdom teachings that I've been describing over these days. Letting go of self-concern, letting go of subject and object, letting go of opinions. We don't think of it as generosity, but if I experience the opinion, that heater should be shut off. We need silence. That's what we need in this hall. Stop the machines so we can concentrate. we're able to recognize, well, that's just Amaro's opinion. That's a generosity. Leaving space for others to think, what we need is more heat. This place is freezing. Who cares about the noise? What we need is warmth. It's a generosity, isn't it? To lay aside what I prefer to make space for what others prefer, even if you know you're right. In fact, especially if you know you're right. This is offering of Dhamma, isn't it? Right there is the embodiment of Dhamma. This is an opinion. It arises, it passes away, it's not self. Why does it have to be acted on? Why does it have to be believed in? Aha! And during this day, this is our last full day together, it's a very good opportunity to consider the all of the wisdom teachings that we've been exploring, practicing. In developing within ourselves, and to consider how these can be brought into our everyday world, our actions, our speech. This quality of generosity, being ready to share what we have, being ready to let go of our fixation on me and mine, my opinions, my preferences, my stuff. We can explore. Look at how those wisdom teachings, the insights into not-self, directly inform, strengthen, clarify, inform the quality of generosity, and then acts of generosity also inform and support the insight into selflessness. Dana supports punya, wisdom. Wisdom supports dana. They work together. also, as I've been pointing out a few times, when we engage in a particular action, along with, say, following that intention to be generous, to be kind, to make space for others, offer our time, our concern, our care for others, after we have offered it, after we have acted on that generous intention, look and see. How does your heart feel? What's the result of having acted in a generous way? Often there's a moment of hesitation. You've got two apples, and it can be an experience of resistance. So offer the best one to your friend. Something in the heart goes, But if we listen to that, feel that resistance, know it, and then decide to not be guided by that, to push through it. Like pushing through the curtains, through the door. Then when we've made that gift, how do we feel? What's the quality in the heart? If you're anything like me, what is always felt is a sense of brightness, spaciousness, delight. This is what we mean by punya, or blessings, merit. It's the brightness of the heart that comes from wholesome action, unselfish, skillful action. There's a delight there, a freedom, a joy at having helped another, at having not been dominated, guided by self-concern. Ajahn Sumedho said many, many times over the years, happiness comes from getting what you want, but joy comes from giving. It's a whole different quality of delight. There's a spaciousness, a freedom to it. In Buddhist psychology, our sense of well-being, what Western psychology you call a positive self-image, or a healthy self-image, is based primarily on the development of dana and sila. The first two of the 10 perfections, the 10 paramitas, dana and sila. When we're acting in ways that are unselfish, we're acting in ways that are noble, respectful, this opens up a direct connection, a direct a channel within us, within the heart, to our own most fundamental, pure nature, opens up the door to the Dhamma, to that fundamental reality of our own being, the Dhamma itself. The basis of our actions, our relationship to the world, is dana and sila, unselfishness, respectfulness. Then we form a basic attunement to the reality of the way things are. And that attunement, just like all the instruments of an orchestra all being in tune, then beautiful music is possible. If the instruments are out of tune, then beautiful music, harmonious music, is going to be hard to establish. These simple, basic, direct, fundamental practices, dana and sila, they are attuning our life to the reality of the way things are. And in that, the result of that attunement is self-respect, a quality of ease and relaxation. As the Buddha said, one who lives virtuously, there's no need for them to think, may I be free from remorse, because it's natural. If one is virtuous, lives according to the sila, it's natural for their heart to be free of remorse, of regret. One who is free of remorse, there's no need for them to think, may my body be relaxed. May I feel delight, because it's natural for one who is free of remorse to be physically relaxed and to experience delight, contentment. One who is content, there's no need for them to consider, may my mind be concentrated, because for one who is content, it's natural for the mind to easily be concentrated. For one whose mind is concentrated, there's no need for them to think, may insight, may knowledge and vision of the way things are arise in me, because it's completely natural. For one whose mind is concentrated, knowledge and vision, the insight, to arise. Liberation is a natural process. The Buddha pointed out, this is based on these simple, tangible, practical qualities. Keeping the sila, developing abhaya dana, simple acts of generosity. Giving time, giving material things, giving our attention. Giving space to others. When we speak of unselfishness, it's a simple word in English, but in Buddhist psychology there's a couple of different layers to that. Well, the Buddha defined four stages of liberation. First stage is called stream entry, entering the stream of Dhamma. Second stage is called a once returner, meaning one who has reached that second stage will experience no more than one return to the human world before enlightenment is guaranteed. The stream enterer will have up to seven more lifetimes, but no more before full enlightenment. In the third stage, anagami is means a non-return. So one who has reached the third stage of enlightenment, anagami, after this life, then it's said they'll be born in one of the Brahma worlds, is what they call the Sudavasa. They won't come back to the human world, and they'll realize full enlightenment up there in the pure abodes in Sudavasa. And the fourth stage is that of full enlightenment, arahatship. The very first obstacle to stream entry is what is called sakaya ditti. Sa means true or real, kaya means body or form, person. Ditti means view. So sakaya ditti means the view of the real person. Person also known as self-view or personality view. So this is the belief. I am the body. I am the personality. So it's selfishness, self-centered thinking based upon our body, our age, our personal story, our family, our gender, our health, our achievements, our failings. All of those things we put on our curriculum vitae. I am a doctor. I am a monk. I am a woman. I am a man. I was born in England. I was born in Bulgaria, Israel, America. All those details in the passport. To believe those to be absolute truths is sakaya ditti. So, the first level of letting go of selfishness, self-centeredness, is to see that being English is a convenient fiction. I can say, well, I've got a British passport, but my grandfather was Karl Goldschmidt from Koblenz. He was Jewish, and his wife was Marie-Madeleine Georgine Louise Barat from Ostend in Belgium, and she was a Catholic. My dad, it was Tom Horner, and he's totally English. So, am I English or the kind of Euro-Mongol? The passport says British. Am I Jewish, Catholic, Anglican, Buddhist? My birth certificate says Church of England. My genes say all different kinds of things. So to say I'm English, British, is a convenient fiction. I also have an American passport too. I'm American as well. To see that all these stories are simply that, convenient fictions, is to let go of that most basic level of self-centeredness, sakaya ditti. But self-centeredness, selfishness, functions on a much more subtle level as well. one of the obstructions, the bonds that even an anagami experiences. So even if you're at the third stage of enlightenment, you still experience the more subtle level of selfishness, which is called asmi-mana. Asmi means I am. Mana means conceit. So asmi-mana is the conceit of I am. So even if there's a clear insight that the body is not self, feelings are not self, perceptions are not self, mental formations are not self, Englishness, Americanness, Jewishness, Catholicness, masculinity, femininity, these are not who and what we are. Even when those have been seen through and let go of, that being a monk is just a convenient fiction. Being a doctor, being a teacher, being a Dharma practitioner, these are just convenient fictions that can be clearly seen, but yet there can still be at the very basis this feeling of me, I, but not attached to anything, not attached to any story. There's a beautiful sutta about an old monk called Kemaka. At the end of his life, some of his friends in the monastery say, "So, Kemaka, you're an old monk, you've been doing this for decades. Have you reached the end of the path yet? Have you realized enlightenment?" And Venerable Kemaka says, "Well, it's absolutely clear to me that the body is not self, feelings are not self, perceptions are not self. His personality is not self. It's not who and what I am. But yet, this feeling of I still persists." He said, "It's like a flower. You can smell the flower, the fragrance, but you can't tell where the fragrance comes from. Is it from the petals? Is it from the pollen? Is it from the stalk? Where does it come from? You can't tell. But still, the fragrance is there. It's not attached to any one thing, but yet, it's all around the flower." So he was pointing out that he'd certainly seen through Sakkaya Ditti, but Asmimana was still embedded, the conceit of I. Now, Venerable Kemaka is unique in the whole of the Pali Canon in that as he was giving this explanation, he became an arahant. So he got enlightened hearing his own Dhamma talk. It's a pretty neat trick. So by the time he got to the end of the talk, Asmimana had fallen away as well. So when we speak about letting go of selfishness, practicing generosity, it's not just a matter of letting go of Sakkaya Ditti, attachment to our personal stories, our loves, our hates, our achievements, our grievances, our complaints, our body, our family. It's also the greatest generosity of all is to let go of asmi-mana. Letting go of I and me and mine at that most profound and complete level. This is the greatest generosity. And also, as the Buddha said, this is Nibbana, here and now. To be free of the conceit, I am, that is Nibbana, here and now.